Hello, and welcome to another episode of Classy Coders, a podcast where computer science educators and technology professionals come together to explore the present and future of computer science education. Join us today as industry leaders share insights on the most in-demand skills shaping the workforce, while educators reveal how they're equipping students to meet these challenges head-on. Together, we'll bridge the gap between classrooms and careers, preparing the next generation for a tech-driven world. Today we have Matt Caratachea, Director of Instructional Innovation for Goochland County Public Schools, and Greg Kontos, Principal Software Engineer at SimpleThread. Welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Awesome. So I'll jump right into the questions with you both, if that's okay. From your perspective, what are the most critical technology skills students need to develop to thrive in today's workforce?
Maybe I should go first just because it's about students, and then Greg could tell me about how everything that I say is not right and that he doesn't use any of this stuff, and then I'll learn a lot.
I would love to hear that. Yes.
So when it comes to technology skills that I think students need to have when they leave K-12, I feel like they need to be nimble and flexible with different tools that they use. They can't just use the same thing for the same job over and over and over and over again. They need to be exposed to a bunch of different things to help them develop literacy across the board. They also need to be creative and productive. They can't just, you know, sit there and get things from technology. They have to be producers when it comes to technology. But also that could be my bias just from my background, because I feel like technology has that power to help you unleash creativity in new ways. So I'd love to hear what Greg says about that. But also thinking about collaboration in the world we live in now, students need to be able to work with each other face-to-face, but also they're going to be in meetings, no matter what they do, that don't involve face-to-face or even synchronous meetings. Maybe they're working on projects together with people across the world or across, you know, the state or country. Because just thinking about the way my job works, I have been working all morning on things with people all over the region, even though they work with me in Goochland. So I feel like they just need to be flexible and maybe creative and productive.
I love that. I like the idea of, I don't know if you compared it to art, but it definitely invoked the sort of artistic idea of exposure to as many different material types. You know, it's an artist might work better with, you know, watercolors versus acrylics versus colored pencils versus digital tools. I mean, you have to, you know, we treat the arts with that style of education of, you know, let's try as many materials as we like, find which one you enjoy, and maybe that's what you can glom onto. And especially the flexibility of kids nowadays, depending on what they might excite them about computer science, you know, giving them the tools to know what they might need to know.
I love that. I think it's also like artists get their hands dirty. Yeah. And they break stuff and mess things up to figure out how things should be or could be. And I feel like it's kind of the same thing with technology. Like, you can get in there, get your hands dirty, push it to its limits to kind of push creativity in a new way, which I love that analogy. I'm taking that. Thank you.
Please. Yeah, Greg.
I think that keys on something else that's important, which is that trying lots of different things helps build the curiosity, and it exposes you to different parts of the technology landscape that you can attach your curiosity to. That's an important thing in the software world and pretty much anywhere. Like, different innovation programs, that's a big thing. It's like, how do you continuously change and drive change? And it requires that kernel of being curious about what you can change to start with.
Yeah, one of the biggest rules, I'm an improviser, and one of the biggest things that they say is you have to learn the rules of improv so that you know how and when to break them. And I feel like you're both sort of touching on that concept, Greg. I feel like you also, in your background, when we talked before, you're a, feel like you break stuff.
Not to break it for long.
Well, maybe not professionally, but when you're attaching your curiosity to something, I feel, you know, I've, you have to learn how it works, and then you have to try things that might not work, but that's all learning.
You know? Yeah, you got to know what rules you can break, and which ones you should.
Right, which ones are critical to not break, especially in code, because, yeah, you hit that run button, you hit that test button, and suddenly your web page is just a 404, and it's, you know. How has the rapid pace of technological innovation impacted what and how we should be teaching students about computer science?
So I feel like one of the biggest impacts of this, the rapid pace that we're living in now, is just the ubiquity of technology, especially, you know, post-COVID in K-12 worlds where we had to shift. Luckily, where I was and where I am now, we were slightly more prepared than maybe somebody who wasn't already in a technology-rich environment. But now we're there. But it also doesn't always mean that just because you have the tools, you're doing productive and creative, and I love curious things with them. Because you can walk into a classroom and you could see, you know, kids designing 3D models to 3D print and to fix a problem that they see at their house or at school or something, which that's like one of my favorite things to see and do. But you could also walk into, you know, you talk to a kid, what'd you do last night on your iPad? Did you do anything cool? Oh yeah, I watched YouTube videos all night. There are definitely advantages to YouTube. I love like the free access to knowledge, and you can learn so much from YouTube. But if you're not doing anything with that knowledge, then I don't know if it's the same as, you know, maybe watching a YouTube video to learn a new skill and then putting that into practice. So I think it's really interesting to see like where we are with technology and how that impacts computer science, because I feel like what we're teaching kids when it comes to, because Greg, I don't know if you know, but in Virginia we have kindergarten to eighth grade standards for computer science that teachers are supposed to integrate into what they're teaching. And it's really cool because it takes like, okay, well, it's the base level. This is a keyboard. This is a mouse. And then all the way up to, you know, computer programming and learning like terms like and algorithms and all of this. And it's supposed to be integrated into teaching and learning. And now that we have easy access to these tools, like you can start coding on an iPad when you're in preschool. We've got preschoolers, you know, using Scratch Junior to code, which is really cool. Yeah. Yeah. And making, you know, maybe they read a story and it's the little monkeys jumping on the bed, like 10 little monkeys jumping on the bed. And then they can remake it using Scratch Junior. So it connects to literacy and reading and all of that. And
I'm kind of the active interaction with technology instead of like exactly YouTube passive, absorb and see a video.
For sure. And I think if we keep that in mind, and luckily the computer science standards kind of keep that active kind of framework mm-hmm. in mind. If we keep that in mind, I think it just yields better technology use, in my opinion. But I have to give a quick shout out to somebody from CodeVA.
Please.
I was at a regional panel last week, and John Stapleton
yeah.
was on the panel, and he's over the curriculum part of CodeVA and other things, it sounds like. but he was saying that, you know, just because we have these rapid advances, and he was asked kind of a similar question, not the same. And I'm paraphrasing, so if he listens to this and I'm totally wrong, you can email me and call me out, John. But just because we have these rapid advances doesn't mean, like, we need to blow it up and start over. It lets us kind of, we still need to lay that base level understanding, kind of like what you guys were talking about earlier. Like, you still need that base level knowledge to build on to things. So just because he used the example of blockchain. So somebody asked him, when are we going to start teaching kids in K-12 about blockchain? He's like, well, I don't really know if that's like super appropriate. Maybe we need to build like a base level of computer science knowledge and then go from there. But luckily we have the tools and innovations to put that stuff in kids' hands so that we can start teaching this stuff. And then when they graduate high school, they can invent something new, you know. What do you think, Greg, about the technology and computer science?
The last 25 years, it's just been a constant that technology has changed and changed rapidly. So I started writing software a long time ago, back in the 80s, took classes in the 90s. And since then, you've got the growth of the internet, you've got the dot-com crash from sure. the internet, and then the 2008 stuff, and then blockchain has come up, AI has come up through that time. Cloud computing is another big one that's popped up in the last 25 years, and it's just been it's not even the background. It is the business and the industry, and I think when I try and put that together with education and what that sort of background of just rapid change it comes down, curiosity is a big one, because you can't survive in that sort of environment without researching and looking into the next thing. And to do that continuously over time requires a certain amount of just interest in the field. Hard to give that to people. I think what you mentioned about different variety of activities that they can use, that's a big part of it, in my opinion. But yeah, change is just always.
I think what you said made me think too. It's like you got to spark. I feel like every time we say curiosity, we should ring a bell. But it's sparking this curiosity within kids is super important, because everybody just assumes they come in digital natives, you know, air quotes. They come in, know how to use everything. They may have to know how to navigate a phone or an iPad or something, but can they be creative and productive with it? Maybe, but maybe you need to spark something in them to, you know, use and look at something in a new way.
Yeah, and I think another thing that brings to my mind is you mentioned the foundations too, and there's, I think, a shift in how those foundations should be applied somewhere in the curriculum, because you got people who need the foundation to just work with computers and just general day-to-day stuff. Like, everybody's job has changed because of how much software you're doing, versus people who are going to be really digging into the kind of core underlying problems. The foundation you need to address both is different, which makes me think also of some of the stuff I've heard about current school programs teaching kids Python and working in Jupyter Notebooks right out of college or high school. That's amazing. That's perfect. It's like it pushes the bar forward for so many different groups across the board, not just for people doing their regular day-to-day job, engineers or business folks, but also the software engineering side.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it does strike a chord, you know, hearing you both talk about the foundational aspects in a conversation about, you know, the rapid growth of technology. You know, it's fascinating to hear that be sort of affirmed, I guess. It makes sense. You know, you have to have this exposure, you have to figure out how to attach kids' curiosity to it, and then there's this sort of consumption versus creation factor, where it is so based on consumption nowadays. I mean, the school kids' internal culture is consumption based. Do you know this dance? Did you see this TikTok? You know, do you understand this reference that I'm making when I say this funny phrase or word or something like that? Like, oh, you didn't see the video? You should spend another hour on TikTok. And it's like, I get it, because there was that pressure when I was growing up of like television, you know, Saturday morning cartoons. I mean, I was glued to the television on Saturdays because it was a cultural touchstone for me. You know, if I didn't know what happened on Pokemon, that was a big deal. And so that we're always grappling with that in the world of education, of this sort of cultural. But what's fascinating now is how close it is. The gap is so close. There was a television in my living room, but I didn't have a television in my pocket for 18 to 20 hours a day. However, if they're not sleeping, I feel like kids don't sleep anymore. You know, and so how do we need to retool the foundations? Do we need to rethink the foundations, or do we just need to dig deeper into those foundations and then connect them to these larger things of like, okay, you just built something in Scratch. Let me show you what this would look like in Python. You know, like, do we need those end result resources to show kids? Because that's the other hard part that I found, especially learning to code by myself, is seeing the end of the road. You know, like, I might want to code something amazing, but I'm not willing to devote 3 years of my life to figure out how to do it by myself. But if I was a student in school and I was shown this concept and then said, this is what you could do with these same principles, I'm wondering if there's a way to teach or create that motivation, you know, in them. It's just a thought, you know, to think about. I found that fascinating.
What you said made me think about two things. You're totally right about not having, we didn't grow up with a television in our pocket, but we also didn't grow up with a computer where we can take videos and edit and make really awesome things. And even just, you know, pictures, and you can, I feel like the Gorillaz recorded one of their albums all on an iPad.
Sure.
And I'm like, those are things that we give to kids, you know, this is amazing.
Yeah.
So I think it's shifting the mindset of, yeah, this thing's only for watching TikToks. Why don't you make something? You could, and that's one of the things that I think that TikTok did well was it kind of made everybody a creator and kind of leveled that playing field. But the second thing that you said made me think of something. Oh, it might come back to me. I don't know. You're going to have to edit this
building
out.
Building a motivation
side? Oh, yeah. So what you were saying, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
What you were saying kind of makes me think about the three of us in this room. Like, I think I can improve in my job in helping bring what that final product looks like to Goochland with collaborations, because sometimes, you know, those elementary school, middle school, or even high school kids don't know what that next step is. Or, yeah, I did this with this program, but what does it look like more refined or more professional? Or how does that even workflow even work in the real world? And then, but working with, you know, industry, connecting that with education, even as early as elementary school, saying, all right, well, you all use Scratch to make this thing, this game or this video or this program. Well, this is what Greg does in his job, and he works with all of these people doing all of this stuff. This could be a career path for you. If you really like this, then it kind of like sparks that curiosity, I think, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Can you share examples of successful collaborations between education and industry to enhance computer science education?
Greg?
I'm going to let you start.
that's tricky, I guess. The question brings to mind my high school. So I went to high school in Northern Virginia at Thomas Jefferson High School.
Oh, yeah.
Up there. And there was a lot of industry collaboration with that school. So our computer science lab at the time had a mainframe computer from IBM. So,
whoa.
Huge.
That's the real deal.
Took up a room bigger than this. Like,
wow.
Twice as large as this room, which now is probably like your laptop size. But
oh, yeah.
Nonetheless, we got lots of funding from places, and because of that funding, they would bring up problems that you could solve. Holograph lab kind of stuff.
Whoa.
So these things are coming from like major donors,
yeah,
bringing up not just the tools to work with, but some of the problem sets that you would want to look into. And that was a great collaboration. It's not necessarily obtainable across the board,
sure,
but it did provide a pretty interesting learning experience.
What kind of problem sets are you talking about?
So I mentioned the hologram stuff, and that was stuff that people brought up to that's now part of your IDs. So that just the setup of that in general was something that came up from industry saying, we'll give you money to build this lab so you guys can look into this problem that we're currently looking into.
Hmm. Wow. So they just trusted high schoolers to be able to figure it out?
Yeah. They just gave them the space to kind of mess around with these things. You know, I think other ones are kind of building your own cars kind of stuff. And I think folks do that now in a lot of high school situations, definitely college situations, which is a little less cutting edge of science.
Sure.
But still kind of going through some of the same problems. Like, how do you make that car you have electric now?
Right.
How do you integrate some self-driving? They're probably not doing that.
Right, yeah. But I mean, LIDAR, you know, yada, yada. But like,
right,
it sort of treating it more like a, is it the Career and Technology Education Centers that we have around Virginia, where it is very practical, these sort of high school systems that you get actual practical applications of these scenarios, I guess, or problem sets where, you know, if to connect industry professionals maybe with higher education or with K-12 schools and say, this is a website that I've got, you know, or maybe like publishing, bringing a version, an older version of the website and saying, it's got this problem. I'm trying to load it and it's not working. Can you all fix this for me? And that's, you know, a semester's project or something, you know, I don't imagine that would be that hard to try and get into schools, but maybe Matt, you can speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, I feel like it probably depends on the school or school division. And kind of like what you were saying too, Greg, it's like it kind of hinges, something like that hinges on connections with one group or one person in industry. But I mean, if somebody came to me and was like, hey, we've got this idea where we pitch, you know, these problems to students, do you have a class that'll fit? I would go to a meeting 10 minutes right after that and say, we got to figure this out. We have to find a class that we can put this in. And a CTE class would be perfect for that.
Yeah.
We've got a really robust CTE program in Goochland. Very lucky to have that.
It's a lot of what the Da Vinci Center does at VCU.
It is, yeah.
To bring that down to the high school level.
Mm-hmm. And I think, so I'll get into some collaborations that we've had in Goochland. But first, I'll talk about another school. So Code RVA, the regional high school here in Richmond, it's like...
No connection to Code VA.
No connection. They both like Code.
We both like each other. We're very good friends. However, we are separate entities entirely. Just marketing needing to say that. Thank you. Continue, Matt.
They're over by, kind of like by the Diamond. And I toured a couple of times to see where, because we don't participate in Code RVA Regional High School, but we've thought about it, and then it hasn't been the right time yet, so we're trying to figure out when or if that'll happen. But I went there for a couple of tours, and there was a class where the kids were doing exactly that. Businesses brought problems or ideas that they wanted to kind of accomplish, and I'm sure that it was like, here's our list of things. These are like it would be amazing if something happened, but it's not going to be like dire. But let's see what happens if we put it in the hands of high school kids. And they were working together in groups on projects to meet the needs of businesses that came to them with problems, which I think is super cool and can be brought into pretty much any high school. But you just need that connection. And it might hinge on one or two people in the school division, but it can happen. I feel like it can definitely happen. But for us, we partner with anybody and everybody who would like to partner with us. So if you are out there and you want to do something really cool with K-12, let me know.
Goochland is open.
Goochland is open. One of our parents of a student at one of our elementary schools, I met with him and then one of our instructional technology coaches. It was a little while ago, but he is the CEO for a GIS company and he works with businesses to solve, you know, problems that GIS can solve. And he was like, there's a whole curriculum for K-12 with this kind of stuff. And I had no idea that you could have kindergartners starting to learn, you know, this kind of stuff. So we're working together to figure out how to implement that in Goochland. And I don't know where it'll go. I hope it'll take off. He had lots of really cool ideas. And I think, like, the selling point when we were talking, he was like, have you ever wondered why, you know, there's a Starbucks on, like, it seems like every corner? And then he's like, well, companies like ours figure out, oh, it would be most optimal to put the Starbucks right here, even though it seems ridiculous because it's right across the street. But just because of, like, traffic flow and all of this, yeah, it's all because of, you know, the technology that we bring to companies. And I was like, well, I want our kids learning that stuff, so we got to figure this out. So that's one thing. But also, I don't know, does Code VA count? Because we partner with Code VA all the time.
Oh, yeah, sure.
They helped us design... We started a computer science ambassadors program where teachers signed up, and then last summer Code VA, we worked with Code VA for professional development, and then they're writing lessons and units that integrate computer science, and then this summer coming up, they're going to bring a friend or two, and our group is going to grow, and it'll be interesting to see how our partnership with Code VA goes with that. But yeah, we partner with lots of businesses and industries, so email me.
Absolutely. Or email info@codevirginia.org if you want to be connected with either of our wonderful guests today. That does bring up a really interesting point, is that we have Code VA's mission is to create curriculum items that integrate computer science into other subjects in K-12 schools. We are writing history lesson curriculums that help teachers use computer science principles to teach their same history lessons, to teach their same math lessons, their same science lessons.
That makes me think. So we have a work-based learning program in Goochland where, you know, kids, there's a bunch of different opportunities that they can do, but it can lead to, like, internships or apprenticeships. And we have a marketing class who they started, like, an incubator at Goochland High School, and it's called Market Up. And so they market for businesses, and they... Oh, that's another collaboration, I guess.
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, that's awesome.
So they were looking at the work-based learning website, and they were like, this website, it doesn't do what we need it to do. These are all the ways that we would make it better. And as they were talking about it, the person who manages that one webpage was in the classroom, and she was like, do you all want to help me make it better? And so they're working on making like their web presence for work-based learning much better. And it's kind of like the same deal. Like, it wasn't a business, but the kids at our high school are helping our school division just become a better place, which is amazing.
Love that.
Thanks so much for listening to Classy Coders. Tune in next time for more from Greg and Matt as we discuss individual approaches to coding, how it feels to approach a coding problem, and what it means to be a developer from a self-education standpoint. This is Classy Coders.